This is SB Nation Radio.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
The next generation of sports radio. This is the Tony D Show.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
Live from the Quicken Loans Studios in New Jersey.
Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today.
Here's Tony Desiri.
Here on a Friday, SB Nation Radio. I am Tony D, and last night the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Oakland Raiders to take control for now of the AFC West as they go to 10-3. Raiders also 10-3, but now Kansas City has got the two-game sweep over the Raiders during the regular season. I was looking around, and last night's game, I thought, as I'm watching this and watching Kansas City kind of get 21 points in the second quarter and then sort of keep everything in check. And I said to myself, okay, the question I have to ask is Kansas City a legit Super Bowl team? Now, on the surface, you could say, well, of course, they've won 10 games. You throw yourself into the playoffs, anything can happen. We've seen teams win three games on the road to get to the Super Bowl. The Giants have done it. The Steelers have done it. So, yeah, get into the postseason and let's see what happens. We've always got that theoretical explanation, right? We always have that. Just get to the playoffs and you never know what can happen for you. But we also have the sort of analytical side of championship-built teams. What do you need to win a Super Bowl? If you were a betting man and you said, look, I've got a bunch of teams here. Which one is the favorite? What are you looking for? It's not just records. It's not just wins and losses. You can go 15-1 and lose in the playoffs. You can go 16-0 and lose in the Super Bowl. So you want a good quarterback, you want a strong enough defense, you want playmakers, you want a good head coach, you want to be pretty healthy, and I think in the end, that's what you're looking for. When I was in college, I had a roommate, and he was a pretty good-looking guy, and he dated a lot of girls. I mean, he was quite a ladies' man, much to the chagrin of me and my other roommate. And he had this one girl. And her name was Jess, and Jess was a sweet gal. They were friends, really good friends. And if there was a perfect example of sort of a platonic relationship between a man and a woman, it was my roommate and this girl Jess. They were like buddies. She would comment on his dates and his girlfriends, and she'd tell him how crazy that he was, and she would say, "Oh no, that girl's perfect for you," and whatnot. And it was kind of like a Hollywood movie. Like he just had this girl that he could hang around with. And I used to joke. I used to use a line from My Blue Heaven, that movie with Steve Martin back in the early 90s. I used to tell him, "You look good together. You ought to marry that girl." A couple years later, we hooked up. We were talking on the phone one time, and he said, "You know what? I married that girl." It ended up being perfect. She wasn't one of the better looking girls that he had ever been with. He had ever dated, but she was perfect. Perfect in every way. She complimented him well. The Kansas City Chiefs are not gorgeous. The Kansas City Chiefs are not sexy. The Kansas City Chiefs will not make every eye turn your way when you go to a cocktail party. They just don't have any of those things. Yet, they're perfect. They might be the right team for the AFC. Now, believe me, you wait. If the Kansas City Chiefs go to the Super Bowl, you know the guys and gals that go to Super Bowl parties that have no idea what's going on during the regular season, just show up for the party, will probably start asking a lot of questions about this team. Because there's no Tom Brady. There's no Aaron Rodgers, right? There's no Dallas Cowboys star. There's nothing easily identifiable with what the Kansas City Chiefs bring. But they're coached really well. Their quarterback is efficient. They've got a good, fun playmaker now in Tyreek Hill. They run the ball pretty well. Their defense is good enough. They just know how to win. They won't blow you out. And they didn't need to score any more points in the second half on a very cold night at Arrowhead. They didn't have to put up any more points. They got to Derek Carr, and they rushed him a lot on throws. He only completed 17 passes for 117 yards, right? It's 3 yards of a completion. So it is, to me, it is Kansas City may not be the flashy team like the Pittsburgh Steelers, where they'll put up 35 points a game and have this dynamic offense and this vertical game that's pretty awesome and fun to watch. Nor do they have that legendary quarterback that continues to write the history books and continues to whip through opponents and get to the postseason and win championships like the New England Patriots. But they're good enough. They're the right team in the AFC. That game wasn't really fun to watch last night. But if you were paying attention and you were really looking at them, you could see yourself saying, yeah, when this team is playing, when it plays well and goes into the playoffs and does these things, yeah, they're a threat to every single team they'll play. Now, the same problem with the Chiefs is what I've been saying earlier this week. They need a game in which it's identifiable what they do, right? You go to a Steelers game, and if that game is 35-31, you get an idea that the Steelers were able to do what their identity on offense is. We score points, we throw the ball downfield, we have a dynamic offense, so even if we lose this game 38-35, you're pretty much sure that if you go into the box score, you're going to see Steeler football offensively. Same with the Patriots. You can sense when Tom Brady's having a 4-touchdown game. I don't know what the Kansas City identity is other than we just score more points than the other guy. And that's not an identity. That's not an identity. That's just the way you win football games. But Kansas City, again, they might just be the right team in the AFC. I know it sounds crazy because in the end, I'd love to see them do this in December. They're not a very good December team. They're not good in the postseason. They don't have this track record of going to AFC title games and losing. We saw this with the Ravens for a few years, like Joe Flacco early in his career. Joe Flacco made the playoffs immediately, and he would continue to go to the playoffs and continue to go to the playoffs. And then one day you felt like, Joe Flacco, this is just going to work, right? Remember when they lost to New England, Lee Evans dropped the pass late in the game, and they could have. You just felt like any year this Ravens team is built to win something, and they're going to get this done. Kansas City, I haven't seen that yet in the playoffs. And other than shutting out Houston last year, I haven't seen them go into the postseason and have their kind of game in which they win. I think they blew a huge lead to Indianapolis like 3 or 4 years ago. That's the difference. That's what makes people hold off. But other than that, that's a good game last night against a really good team. And I don't know how you guys felt, but I was really disappointed in Oakland, especially given the closeness of that game at halftime. It's only 21-10. I know it was cold. The Raiders took advantage of Hill muffing a punt. They got a field goal out of it early. Then Hill scored a touchdown on a pass from Alex Smith and scored on a punt return when the stadium's chanting his name. And the Raiders, it just was frustrating. Derek Carr was not very good. I mean, 2.9 yards per pass attempt? Come on. Nevertheless, we still get an idea of these teams as we head down the stretch. All right, 800-777-2907. Coming up, Casey Smith will join us. We'll talk some college football with her because we've got some coaching changes. We've got the playoffs now. We've got the Heisman Trophy coming up on Saturday, so we'll get an idea of college football, where to go with this, with Casey Smith coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll also talk Jerry Jones because I love Jerry Jones, but he is talking a lot about Romo, about the plans for the future, about all of this stuff that I don't know is, I don't think it's very good right now. I think Jerry Jones needs to sort of slow down. Houston has made their coaching hire. It is not Lane Kiffin. It is not Les Miles. It is Major Applewhite. They've promoted him up from offensive coordinator. And I think this is great. I think this is a great move for Houston. One of the things you don't want to get in if you're Houston is you don't want to be somebody's second choice. Right? You don't want to be somebody settling for you. And Lane Kiffin has big dreams. Lane Kiffin wants to be back on the large stage of college football. He has seen it firsthand. Both when he was at times when he was at USC under Pete Carroll, now under Nick Saban. He had it when he was the head coach at Tennessee. He wants that large stage. Houston is a great program, but they're not a Power 5 team. Lane Kiffin is going to want a Power 5 job. So you bring in Lane Kiffin, you make this big splash, you know, you get try people sort of fired up and sort of go, well, you know, maybe it didn't work at USC, but it'll work here. But then he's always looking over his shoulder at the next best job. The one thing you have to remember is Lane Kiffin literally walked out on Tennessee for the USC gig. Just walked out. Very short. I think it was there a year before he walked out and took the USC job. If you're Houston, if Tennessee couldn't keep him, Houston's not going to be able to keep him when the big, big SEC job opens up or the big Pac-12 job opens up. As good of a job Houston is. Major Applewhite, here's a chance to earn your chops as head coach. It keeps the offense rolling along. They like quarterbacks in Houston. He's a quarterback, a former quarterback. He's a quarterback guy. He's responsible for the big numbers there. They should be able to keep that rolling along. It's a good hire for Houston. Coming up, what's Jerry Jones saying about Romo, the Cowboys playing out the string, and why it's not such a good idea? I'm Tony D. It's SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
All right, thanks for joining us here on SB Nation Radio here on a Friday. Casey Smith joins us in 15 minutes. We'll talk some college football with her. Heisman Trophy ceremony coming up this weekend. I don't think there's any drama. I think Lamar Jackson's going to win it, but you never know. There's five people there. You know, they don't always bring five people to the show, although it feels like they should, because if you have a two-hour pregame show, you might as well fill it with something. But, you know, there might be some drama. It really all depends how the votes break down. It's one of my favorite awards because, I'm not into politics, but I'm into election night, like how it all breaks down and the strategy of presidential elections. You know, we'll spend money here, we won't spend money here, we'll go here, we'll go there, we won't go here. You know, the way a candidate has to play to his strengths, shore up some of the weaknesses, but play the 270 game when it comes to the Electoral College. And the Heisman Trophy is similar to that, right? They break everything down in regions. You know, you have three people on your ballot, and you get points based on where you finish on every ballot. So you're trying to find the candidate that would appear on every single ballot. And I'll give you an example. Baker Mayfield and Dede Westbrook, that is always, now conventional wisdom would say that neither one of them is going to win because both are appearing on a lot of ballots. They sort of break each other off. Right. You need somebody that is on all the ballots. You know, Tim Tebow is a perfect example of this. Tim Tebow won the Heisman in 2007 as a sophomore. He was a finalist in 2008 and a finalist in 2009. I think he should have won it in 2009. But nevertheless, what made Tim Tebow's candidacy so big was he was going to appear on ballots all across the country. It just didn't matter where. So the guy that's covering the Pac-12 in Seattle, he doesn't even have to watch a Florida game to know Tim Tebow is having a good season, an important season. He's doing these great things. So you may fill in your Pac-12 guy at the top. You may fill in somebody else you've been seeing late somewhere else in number two. But then Tebow goes on the third. And he appeared on so many ballots that it made his candidacy for the Heisman Trophy viable in every single year that he went to New York City. In this case, I think Lamar Jackson was that player. I think Lamar Jackson, despite his late struggles, was that candidate that is just people would say, look, he may not be my number one. I may go with Deshaun Watson or I may like Baker Mayfield, but I'm going to put him on the ballot. And then there's going to be a group of people that Lamar Jackson is number one. And they all across the board, he's going to be number one. So not only does he get that, but he's just going to get the residuals of people saying, well, I can't fill out my ballot without putting him on there somewhere. Where I don't think Dede Westbrook, despite his great season, is going to appear on everybody's ballot. I don't think that Jabril Peppers is going to appear on everybody's ballot. Deshaun Watson may, Baker Mayfield may, but I think Lamar Jackson is the guy that appears all across the board. Doesn't matter where, one, two, or three, but because you get points for every single time you're on the ballot. And I think that's how it's going to break down in the end. So I don't think there's going to be any drama on Saturday. I think Lamar Jackson's going to win it. I love Jerry Jones. I think Jerry Jones is one of the best owners in sports. I know that people have a problem with the way he's done things, the way he's built the team, the way he's very loyal, almost to a fault. But I love Jerry Jones because I want my sports owner to not be business. I want my sports owner to be a fan too, to want to win as much as I do, to feel what I feel, to make me want to feel proud of the team he's putting out there. And I think Jerry Jones tries to do that. He doesn't always succeed in doing that, but he tries to do that. I was doing a show years ago when Jerry Jones had built the new stadium, and there was this story that a couple had gotten kicked out of the stadium because they had sex in a bathroom. And we were talking about it on the show I was doing, and we both agreed, me and my co-host, both agreed that Jerry Jones is probably really proud of that. Like, really, really proud that his fans tried to have intercourse in the stall of his new place, because that would be a place that they would want to go do that, because it was so magnificent. Jerry Jones is like that, right? He's just built like that. He's got this ego, and he wants everything to match the ego, but he also is loyal. He's loyal almost to a fault, and I think he's making a mistake here with Romo. Tony Romo should go off somewhere else and play. If he feels like he can play, should want to go off somewhere else and play. Romo was asked by Jerry Jones was asked by the New York Daily News if he thinks that he can convince Romo to stick around and finish out his career. And Jones said, I do. I think if I ask Tony to go with us on that and try to win a championship, I think yes, he will. Tony's investing in his teammates. Everybody understands, while he's excited to be part of the team, he's excited for the team. That he's dying inside not to be out there competing. I underline the word dying inside. There are plenty of examples where high-profile quarterbacks didn't go down gracefully and step off the field gracefully. A lot of examples of it. It's just hard for that kind of competitor to do that. I agree, but let this play out the way it plays out without any superlatives attached to Romo and his character. When you say that to the New York Daily News, then you're going to paint Romo. The response is going to be, if when Romo leaves, that either A, you didn't do enough, or B, Tony Romo didn't have the characteristics that you're so fondly talking about now. But here's the catch. No one would blame Romo if he left to try to continue to play in the NFL. There's a window here that's rapidly closing. You don't get to do this in your 40s. You don't get to do this in your 50s. That light is coming at the end of the tunnel for Tony Romo. He's only got a couple of years left. If he wants to spend those couple of years playing for somebody, just playing. It doesn't even matter. Just play. Just start. Just be part of a team and be a starting quarterback. He should do that, and none of us should fault him for that. None of us should fault him for wanting to do that. But here's Jerry Jones thinking he's doing the right thing for Romo's character. Oh, he's a competitor. He's dying inside. He wants to do this. But if I ask him to stay and tell him I think we could win a championship with him as a backup, he'd do it. What if he doesn't want to do it? Now what does this make Tony Romo look like? Because I think most of us are smart, right? Yeah, go. The team is okay now. It's got its quarterback. Go play somewhere else. Go try to win somewhere else. It's cool. Should want to do that. Patriot fans will always, thank Drew Bledsoe for helping Tom Brady and the Patriots win that Super Bowl, because they couldn't have beaten the Steelers without Bledsoe, who was in for the injured Tom Brady in that game. But they also thanked him for the Super Bowl that they appeared in, where they lost to Green Bay and sort of bringing the franchise back up. But when it was time to go, it was time to go. Thanks. Good luck in Buffalo. See you later. I don't think there's any Cowboy fan that thinks Romo is going to be disloyal to the star because he wants to continue playing somewhere else. Don't set it up that way, Jerry. Don't set it up that way. I know you're trying to be nice. Also, when you tell everybody you're not going to rest your starters, don't say that either, because you might have to. You might want to. Don't say you won't. We still got 5 weeks, 5 games left. Don't tell people what you think you're going to do down the stretch. We're not going to rest our starters. Maybe they will. He also said he doesn't want to get Tony Romo hurt. Well, wait a minute. He's either a quarterback or he's not. What are you doing here, Jerry? If Tony Romo can play, he has to be an option for you. You know this better than anybody else. Jerry Jones was one of the forefront owners that wanted to start changing rules on how quarterbacks were hit. He was at the forefront of trying to protect quarterbacks because of investments. He had the investment in Troy Aikman, the investment in Drew Bledsoe, the investment in Tony Romo. He saw the quarterback position as an investment that he didn't want to lose on if he could avoid it. If Tony Romo is healthy like he is now, he is an offensive weapon. He may not play, but he could play. He may be needed to play because we're one play away from having him play. Jerry, slow down. That's all I'm asking. I love you. I think you're a fantastic owner. I love the fact that you want people to love the star as much as you do. I get it. Slow down. This isn't a sympathy train for Tony Romo. This is business. Every now and then, you can get into business. But if Tony Romo's healthy and you don't want to play him because you're afraid he'll get hurt, what are you doing with him on the roster because you need a backup quarterback? That will play. SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation Radio. This is the Tony D Show.
Ah, we're heading into the bowl season, college football playoff. Heisman Trophy Saturday. Casey Smith joins us. You can hear her 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on SB Nation Radio. Talk some college football. How are you, Casey?
I'm great, Tony. How are you doing today?
Good. What did you make of Major Applewhite at Houston? I thought it was a good promotion. What did you make out of it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was on a show this morning, and we were talking about if Lane Kiffin would be a good fit to Houston, and literally in the middle of our segment, the news broke about Major Applewhite. And I was like, well, welcome to live radio, I guess, you know, throwing some wrenches into it today. But, you know, I think it makes sense. I mean, obviously Major Applewhite was not going to be able to go to the University of Texas with Tom Herman just because of all the stuff that's kind of gone on with him in the past and the scandal that went on. So I think that this makes sense. I mean, obviously he's an offensive-minded guy. He's proven that he can handle it. And he's never been a head coach, but this is a good stepping stone for him. And you know, when you look at Lane Kiffin, I obviously was a fan of Lane Kiffin going to Houston just for the entertainment value. But they know that Lane Kiffin, if he had a good season, would probably be gone pretty quick. And I think that Major Applewhite is a good fit because he's going to be there for a little bit. Now, I've seen something on Twitter today, which I think is ridiculous. They're saying he better win 9, 10, or 11 games next year. It's kind of leaking out from some boosters. But you know, as long as he doesn't just royally mess it up next year, I think he's going to be a good fit. He's got Kyle Allen, who's obviously a five-star quarterback transfer from Texas A&M on the roster. So good fit. I wish it was Lane Kiffin just for entertainment value, but I think Houston's going to be happy with this hire.
What did you make of the other hires that came out of that conference of the AAC? Because Tom Herman is obviously the big one that goes from Houston to Texas, but then Willie Taggart and then Matt Rhule. In terms of those guys moving up, what does it say about that conference? Because I like the SEC, and I feel like there's just this lack of big coaches in the SEC.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look outside of Nick Saban right now. I mean, who's the next best coach in the SEC this season? And that's, you know, you could go round and round, and it's pretty tough. I mean, obviously, Les Miles being let go. And I completely agree with you. I think that when you look at that conference in the AAC and you see these guys that are moving up, you know, these guys have been good at these non-Power 5 schools, and they're getting opportunities. And really, out of all of those, the Oregon hire was kind of the most head-scratching to me, not that saying that Willie Taggart is not a good coach. You know, you hear that Phil Knight was wanting to come out and give a coach $10 million. He wants to win a national championship at Oregon, and then they hire somebody who's not even proven in the Power 5 yet. But I think that what it says is that programs are giving these guys opportunities to prove that they can coach at the next level. Sometimes it's worked out, sometimes it's not. And one of the things with Tom Herman that I told people, you know, back whenever it was, where is he going to end up, is that, you know, Kevin Sumlin was Tom Herman at University of Houston a few years ago. I think Tom Herman was a little bit more highly touted just because of what the program had done, but he's at Texas A&M now, and you know, they've not had this just massive success. He's not been horrible, but you don't necessarily know until you get these guys into these programs, but it's people willing to give those guys opportunities. Baylor is completely different in my mind just because it's been such a mess. Obviously, you see reports that Art Briles is now suing Baylor today. I mean, it's just such a disaster in Waco. And Matt Rhule going, he doesn't have a recruiting trail down there. He's not a Texas guy. And it's going into a situation where there's a lot of things going on off the field that I think that they couldn't get a big name in there just because of all the stuff that's gone on. So he's an interesting fit. You know, you hear he's a pastor's son. You hear he really wants to be at a Baptist school. All of these things, how nice of a guy he is. But that's an interesting hire, and I just think it kind of came down to nobody with a huge name and a huge background wanted to end up in Waco until this kind of stuff, you know, fades away a little bit or just kind of moves on from it. So big-time move for the AAC coaches this year, and it'll be interesting to see how they pan out.
Casey Smith joins us here on SB Nation Radio. You can hear her on this network 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Mondays. All right, Casey, P.J. Fleck, what does he do? Does he stick around at Western Michigan, or is there a possibility of him taking a leap somewhere? I don't know where, but what about P.J. Fleck?
You know, I really like him from a standpoint of, you know, he's got that energy. He's kind of got the swagger, for lack of a better word. And you see that, you know, he's obviously a player's coach kind of guy, and he's had success. I definitely think that he's going to be a head coach. I don't know about this year just because the job openings are kind of strange and sporadic. And then you've got guys like Charlie Strong. You've got guys like Lane Kiffin still in the mix. And, you know, obviously P.J. Fleck is a guy that I think we're going to continue to follow for the next few seasons. But this coaching carousel has been very strange this year when Les Miles got fired in week 4. So I think we definitely see him get an opportunity. I don't necessarily know if it's going to be this season, but he's definitely got my attention. I actually had one of my interns say, can he just coach our lives? Can he just be with us all the time? Because he's that motivational. So I like him. And again, he's one of those guys that you want to see take that next step and that next opportunity and see if he can succeed in the Power Five.
There seems to be two school of thoughts with the four teams that were in, that are now in the playoff, which is one, hey, the committee went safe, right? These teams, the Washington won its conference and Alabama won its conference. And there's a safe angle to it. But then there's this other side that says, wait a minute, mix it up a little bit, take a risk, throw a Penn State in there because they won the Big Ten. Do something bold. Where do you sit on the fence of those two arguments?
I absolutely think that Penn State should have been in those top four spots, because if you look at Washington and Clemson, I mean, you just said it perfectly, is that they won their conferences, and had they not won that conference title game, you can argue that they would not be in those spots, both Washington and Clemson. So I kind of looked at it and I said, okay, well, the committee has said that the Big Ten is the best conference all year by the way they've ranked and where they've put teams consistently in the top 10, and then Penn State wins that conference. Obviously, they had the two losses earlier in the year in September, lost to a non-conference Pitt, who, by the way, also beat the number two team in the country with Clemson. There's just not really a great argument of why Penn State should be left out, outside the fact that the committee just thinks that Ohio State is a better team. And I don't necessarily know for sure if I think that Penn State could beat them 6, 7, 8, 10 times out of 10. I think Ohio State may be a better team. But at this point, you look at what Penn State was able to do after beating Ohio State. They weren't just kind of winning. They were winning outright to a lot of teams that Michigan and Ohio State struggled with. So I think Penn State should have been in, just because if you look at conference titles, the way that they're in place now, they should hold weight. And if you look at the eye test and obviously what Penn State was able to do, I do think that they should get in if you put weight on Washington and Clemson winning those title games. So not taking anything away from Ohio State, I think they're a really good team. I think they're the best option. If anybody's going to upset Alabama, I don't think that's going to happen, but I think they match up the best. But I think that it was just really bad that Penn State didn't get in. And not only that, that they seemed to not really even think it was even close. And I just don't understand that thought of that process of thinking. If you want to do that, then get rid of title games. Then just say they don't matter or don't put as much weight, because at this point, the best conference this year was the Big Ten. They won the Big Ten and had one more loss but got left out. It just doesn't make much sense to me.
In terms of the in the professional leagues, the NFL, Major League Baseball, everything is systematic, right? Teams know exactly how to get into the postseason. There's a huge list of all the tiebreakers that can occur. So there's an idea of we get into the postseason by doing this. In college football, it's so subjective. Does that subjectivity of that allow people to start thinking, man, maybe we should go 6 or 8 teams into this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to say first and foremost, though, I'm so happy that the BCS is not around, because even with this subjectivity of 12 people, it's still a hell of a lot better of the computers that, you know, you could never really make an argument for. Sometimes you're just like, how did this even come about? I like the idea that it's human based. I like the idea that there are ways to be subjective. The problem is, and Bob Bowlsby of the Big 12, not that that conference should lead any type of charge at this point, just because the way they've handled themselves. But he said after this year, it's like, what do I tell my members of this conference? Because for a while, it was non-conference games were a really big deal. Well, if you look at Washington's non-conference schedule, it was really bad, one of the worst in Division One. Then you look at, well, title games hold a lot of weight. The Big 12 then got a committee together to decide if they should expand and have a championship game, because TCU was left out in 2014, and then Penn State doesn't get in. So there's a lot of inconsistencies with this thinking, and that's going to happen. It's human element. It's, you know, it's brand new. It's still only 3 years old. I think that you absolutely make a case that you should at least expand it to 6, have a spot for all 5 power conferences, because you can always try to make the argument which conference is better, but until they play each other on the field, you're not really sure. I mean, is Clemson better than Washington, better than OU? We don't know that, but you at least give that opportunity. I'd like to see 8. I'd like to see the conference title games go away and play that extra round on college campuses. I think that would be really cool, not only for the sport and for entertainment, but it just actually gives that opportunity. Who is the best team in the country? Because if you look at a team like USC after they made the change at quarterback, you can argue they're the most dangerous team in the country outside of Alabama right now. Is Penn State really better than Ohio State? Is OU's offense good enough to beat the fact that they don't have a really good defense? We're not going to get to figure that out. If you have 8 teams, you may be able to.
Great, Casey. Great stuff. Really appreciate it. Really good insight. Thank you so much, as always. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Tony. Talk to you later.
You got it. Casey Smith, man, she's really good. Rolling along. She likes 8. 8 teams. 8 teams, a lot. All right, coming up next, we'll talk a little bit more about the NFL.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony Desiri.
Casey Smith. Again, you can hear her 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Mondays on SB Nation Radio talking college football. Heisman Trophy ceremony coming up on Saturday. I think Lamar Jackson wins it. And then, of course, we've got the bowl season. Are you into the bowl season, Joe? Like, do you watch all the bowls? Or is it...
Yeah, I watch as many as I can.
I try, but I just doesn't work. It doesn't work for me sometimes. I like bowl season. I'm a big fan of them. I like the, because here's why I'm a big fan of bowls, and this may be a little bit more old school. I like the fact that that you can have this one game for your school and just for your pride and just sort of, and you know, it goes against all of the whole everybody gets a trophy thing. But as a South Carolina person, it's always kind of cool that there's a game that they can play and they can try to win, and it, you know, just something to watch in December. And because not everybody can be in the playoff, not everybody's competing for the national title. I don't know. It's kind of something to have on during the holidays. So I like them. But the problem is that there's so many. I keep losing track of when they're on, and I keep losing track of what I'm watching. Like, am I watching the Boise Bowl? Am I watching the bowl in the Bahamas? They've got a bowl now in Boca Raton, which that's sometime in mid-December. So I kind of lose track of all of them.
Well, and then they change the names of like the normal bowls. Like,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it
right.
Like the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl, like the Peach Bowl or something like
that? Well, like the it's the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. The Buffalo Wings Bowl. Let me look that up. What's the Buffalo Wings Bowl? The Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl.
It's something
Citrus Bowl. Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl. I mean, look, the Peach Bowl was the Chick-fil-A Bowl for a while, and then people never called it that in Atlanta. They still called it the Peach Bowl for years and years and years. It's really hard to get people out of that sort of comfort zone. I remember the South Carolina Gamecocks went to the Outback Bowl in Tampa, and I was in there at the time. I went to see them, and I had a blast. They played Ohio State. I got to see Scripps, Ohio, which is something I always wanted to see. It was really fun. And again, it doesn't mean anything except to those of us who went to the school. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, South Carolina winning the 2000 Outback Bowl was, you know, is not exactly a sports highlight for the ages, but to us, it was a really big deal. So, yeah, these bowl games can be fun. I took my kids to the Music City Bowl when I lived in Nashville when Vanderbilt played North Carolina State. We still talk about how much fun we had. Those things are great. I want to go to the one in Yankee Stadium, except the matchup doesn't seem to be that good. I think it's Northeastern and, Northeastern and somebody else.
Boston I think I'm going to go to my first. I guess this should be my first bowl game.
Are you going to
the Advocare Bowl?
Yeah, sure. Now, who is in that? Is that
Kansas State and Texas A&M?
That should be a pretty good one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. I've gone to the opening Advocare kickoff game the last 2 years here in Houston, so I haven't gone to the bowl game yet. So this will be my first bowl game that I'll ever go to.
Yeah, bowl games are fun. Listen, if you go into them knowing what they are, they're just, you know, there's just a chance to showcase your team one more time. It gives your team an extra month of practice, and it gives them something to play for, and you can feel really good about it as a fan. Yeah, that's what they are. That's what they are. There's no ramifications for a team winning the Bahamas Bowl, the Popeyes Bahamas Bowl. But you know what? They feel pretty good. Fan base gets a little trip. That's basically what the bowls are. They're great. That's one of the reasons why when people talk about, like, you know, when I used to get these all the time from people. They would come up to me and they'd say, hey, I got a 32-team playoff formula I want to present to you. And you're like, ah. But you forget, like, you have to have these bowls. These bowls are not going away. They're big business. These bowls are big business. And schools like them. And they want to go to them. And you've got to find a way to keep that system intact. Casey brought up something that has to be said about expanding the playoff. If you want to expand more teams, you can't incorporate the bowls. Don't get into this idea like, oh, we're going to use the Citrus Bowl, and we're going to use the Texas Bowl, and we're going to use the Bahamas Bowl as first round. No, it doesn't work that way. The bowls don't want it to work that way. That's not how they want it. That's not what they want to do with it. They want build up. They want to get people, you know, excited. They want tickets to be sold as quickly as possible. They don't want this sort of we don't know who's playing kind of thing. What you have to do is say, look, we're going to expand the playoff, but how we're going to expand it is this. The first rounds are going to be on campus. They're not going to be a part of some bowl system. So if you're living in Nashville, the Music City Bowl is not going to be a first round game between Alabama and some 16th ranked team. It's not going to be how it works. And what you've got to do is say, look, if we want a playoff and you want to expand this to 8 or you want to expand this to 16, which I hope they never do because I think it's too much, then you've got to play the early games in early December on campus sites, establish the playoff after that. Here's where you can go. You go with this if you're smart enough to devise a new system. If you sort of have the first round games on campus, and let's say I'm Texas Tech, and I go on the road and I play Auburn, and I lose early, I still can go to a bowl game. My season isn't going to be over. I can still go to a bowl game. Because after the early playoff games, then we can establish where we are in the playoff. You can do it that way. There are ways to do this, but those first-round games have to be on campus. They have to. The bowl system, if you really know it, if you do your research on it, if you kind of dig into the finances of it and how they work, it's amazing. It's fascinating. I was on I used to sit with the Las Vegas Bowl people when I was working out there in my early 20s. And I would hear them talk about the year it took to build the game up. It's mind-boggling. So that system isn't going to go away. That's too economically entrenched into college football to just come in and wipe it out. It's just not going to go anywhere. All right, real quick. Joe, did you hear that Conor McGregor is going to be in Game of Thrones?
I did. I saw that.
Going to be playing a villain in Game of Thrones coming up.
Yeah, I'm guessing he's going to be part of the White Walkers.
Why wouldn't he? This is great.
And I bet you he's going to have the most kills ever in the show.
I would hope so.
Or he's going to die right away. It's going to be one of the two.
Yeah. Do you give him a good role, or do you give him just sort of a standby role?
I think you probably give him a good role.
Give him a little bit of something, right?
Yeah,
give him a little bit. He's going to be on the crew of Greyjoy's ship.
He's not a White Walker.
Is that the uncle that's going after Theon and his sister?
Interesting.
That's going to be interesting. Hey, I'm looking forward to it. I like Game of Thrones a lot.
Conor
McGregor being on it is going to be great. Game of Thrones is good. When's that come back? April?
A little bit later this year.
God, I got to wait so long. God, these TV shows. Come on. I need like a fix. Tony D, ESPN Nation Radio.